Last year during the crypto bull run, I had $20 million and I lost pretty much all of it because I got greedy, didn't sell at the top, and then crypto crashed. So you're just always going to be dealing with them, but you got to learn to manage your ego, manage greed, and know that they're inevitable. Like a lot of people get super upset about losses and they start dwelling on it, but you kind of just got to learn from it and move on.
I'm Tom Ward, and over the last couple of years, I've had the chance to sit down with some of the biggest celebrities and influencers in the world. What I've always found most fascinating is the stories of the businesses that they've built behind the scenes. On this show, you'll get an inside look of what it takes to build a successful business from some of the biggest celebrities, business people, and up-and-coming entrepreneurs in the world. This is The Tom Ward Show.
Hey guys, welcome to The Tom Ward Show, where every week we talk to the most successful people in the world and they teach us how to improve our lives. It's time to level up. Today we've got Sean Mike Kelly, founder of Jersey Champs, Chibi Dinos, and other startups. He's also got a great podcast you got to check out called The Digital Social Hour. Welcome, man.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Dude, I was thinking about you. You are in a unique position because you've got 9.5 million followers on Instagram. And with a number that big, I've interviewed people who make a living off of that alone. They're full-time creators. They get brand deals. They'll sell hoodies and other merch. Maybe they have their own product, making a ton of money. Mm-hmm. But the problem, the trade-off is they're constantly creating content. There's no days off. They go through burnout. It's short-lived a lot of times. That stuff doesn't last forever. They're in style today. They're gone tomorrow. And they also get recognized, right? If they go to like a mall or something, they can't just go in a store without teenage kids, you know, mobbing them.
Right.
You've got the same numbers as those people, but without all of those headaches I just mentioned, right? Do you get recognized a lot when you go out? Do you get mobbed? Do you have to deal with any of that stuff?
It used to be barely, like I could probably count on one hand before the podcast started. Now, since the podcast, it's definitely picked up a little bit, but I do agree my audience is like an older crowd. So I don't really get like fanboys or anything, which is cool.
So you've said before that Instagram is easy, YouTube is hard, and we'll get into YouTube and why that's hard in a little bit, but I mean, you've obviously figured Instagram out. Why is that easy? And it's not easy to me. It's not easy to the person watching or listening to this. Why was it easy for you?
Yeah, so I've been a user of Instagram since high school. So I think I was just really used to it. On top of that, I'm constantly studying what's trending. So I'll allocate a few hours a week at least to just going on my Reels page and studying which Reels are going viral. And I'm doing that on TikTok and YouTube as well. And then I have a notepad or the notes app on my iPhone, depending on where I am, just writing down viral video ideas and viral questions to ask guests. And I think that really helps.
You seem to have that kind of intense focus and, you know, work smart, not hard kind of approach to things. And I was doing some research and I heard you tell that story about, I mean, you were like that as a kid, you know, going, you know, it's Halloween. Most kids go, fuck, it's Halloween, let me get some candy. Not you, not a young Sean Mike Kelly. He goes, let me get my pillowcase. Let's map out what's the best neighborhood to hit, how far apart the house is, how many houses can I hit per hour, what time do we have to start? What the fuck is wrong with you? Who thinks like that?
Yeah, it was, looking back, it's actually hilarious because I would not only do the pillowcase thing, but I would run in between houses. I wasn't walking because I was trying to maximize my time efficiency. And on top of that, I wasn't even going with friends like normal people. I would go solo because my friends would hold me back. So by the end of it, I would get like over 10 pounds every year. It was crazy.
Where does that come from? I mean, are your parents super driven? Or, I mean, that's, you're different, obviously. And we're going to talk about why. You're very successful. And I'd say this is part of the reason for that. And there's other factors we'll talk about. But where does that come from? What made you different than the 99 other kids who were going, I just want to hang out with my friends and, you know, put on a cool costume and get some candy?
Yeah, I think a number of factors. One reason was I grew up an only child from a parent of immigrants. Everyone in the town I grew up in had a sibling. So I was like the only child. So I guess I learned a lot of independence from that. I never did well in school, so I was looking for alternative routes to make money, make a living. I think that was another big factor. And my dad was just, he had a genius level intelligence. I'm not a genius, but I think I got some intelligence from him. And then my mom was a super hardworking immigrant. She used to scrub the floors, do the dishes, came here with $20 in her pocket from China. So I got sort of the best of both traits from my parents, you know?
What'd your dad do?
He was a computer programmer, so he's really good with computers, taught me how to use a computer, and you know, that's a great skill to have.
Is that so? I mean, it sounds like, do you approach life like that? I mean, it is there room for passion in, say, okay, I'm starting a podcast, I got my YouTube channel, oh, I got my 2 hours a day I've allocated to do research. Okay, you know, this is trend A, B, and C that I'm gonna do this week. Is there room for fun, you know, in that whatever project you're in, is there room for fun and passion in there, or is it all just data driven? Let's crank it out.
No, that's a great question. I mean, I'd say the first few years I was definitely not sacrificing some fun to make money, but now I'm at the point now where I got the money, worked, you know, 3 to 5 years to get some solid money, and I'm just doing stuff mainly for passion now. So the podcast is amazing because I learned so much, meet some great people. Networking is one of my favorite things to do. And I don't feel like it's like work, honestly. Like when I'm researching guests, I find it fun. When I'm researching trends, I find it so interesting. Kind of feel like Mr. Beast low key with how he studies the trend and algorithms.
I think it's true, and I'm the same way. Like doing prep for an interview is like my favorite thing ever to do. Like I think that's key to success anywhere is, yeah, you've got to have both, I think. I think you have to have your laser like focus on whatever that is, whether it's playing guitar or I'm going to start a car wash or whatever your thing is. But it also has to be, I guess it doesn't always have to be, but it helps if you really enjoy it too. Makes things a lot
100%.
easier, don't you think?
Agreed. Yeah, it's a balance for sure. You got to figure out how much you're willing to sacrifice for money, but it's not sustainable to live that way.
So you talk about sacrificing things too. We met for coffee the other day and you said, you know, ask me about my body count. I go, what is it? And you go, one. I almost fell out of my chair. I go, well, shit, if I'm in my 20s, I got millions of dollars. Like, my body count's 1,000. You know, I was a regular dude. I was a fuck up, and my body count was pretty good, I guess, for a guy with my skill set and looks. Like, why was it one?
Yes, I don't think it's due to bad looks or anything. I think it's
You look
more,
good.
yeah, I'd say I look decent. I mean, nothing crazy, but I think it's definitely by choice. The party culture, I actually got over really quick in college. Like after freshman year, I was like, this is so dumb. Like, I'm just wasting my time. I'm negatively impacting my health. And no one even remembers the conversations you have the next morning. So even when you're networking at parties, it doesn't even matter. It's
See,
like going to
whoa,
the
you just
club.
hit on something. You just glanced over something. Just when you're networking at parties, college kids don't network at parties. They hang out at parties, right? You know, so again, back to what makes you different, right? You look at that party differently than I and the person listening or watching, I think, would look at that party.
Yeah, because back then I was trying to like network and make money because I was broke. So I guess there was a sense of urgency there. But even when I would go to like clubs when I was 19, 20, 21, like people would just forget the conversation the next day. So it's like there's no point, you know?
You went to Rutgers, right? I'm a Rutgers graduate. I didn't go to the good campus. I'm from South Jersey. I went to Rutgers Camden, which is the ghetto campus.
Yeah, I
Did you
went there
go to New
once.
Brunswick?
I went to New Brunswick. I went to Camden once. I forget why I was there,
It's an
but
awful town, bro. Scary.
Why'd you go to
Scary.
that one?
Because my story's long, but it took me, that was my third school in 5 years. And it was the best school that would accept me. They had a decent business program. So, you know, they were kind of like the last house on the block, but shout out to Rutgers. That was a pretty good school. But you didn't graduate from college, right?
I didn't graduate. I chose the business over college. It was too hard for me to do both at the time because I was relying on the business to make a living, and I pretty much had to choose. I was skipping class to like work on the business.
Now, you got immigrant parents, right? My wife is the child of immigrants, so I understand that whole mindset, education, education, education. How did your parents take you dropping out of school to, we'll talk about what you're doing. You're selling jerseys, you had a jersey company. How did they take that?
Yeah, so my dad was super chill, actually. He was kind of woke before this
Wow.
anti-college movement started. So he was telling me when I went to college was 2015. So what is that, 8 years ago, that college isn't going to be the move for a lot of business people. And people thought that was crazy back then. Like you had to go to college, especially the town I grew up in. If you didn't go to college, you were a loser. So he was like I'll just give you the money, like from tuition, go to Miami and become a bartender and figure things out. He was chill about it. My mom was a little more tough because she's Asian. So education's super important. She grew up, went to college, went, I think, the best college in China or something. So she took it tough, but once she saw me like actually putting in the hours into work, she gave me a chance. And now she's like my biggest supporter.
So what were you doing? So how does this jersey business start when you're in college? Was that the first business you started?
The first one I started failed completely. It was a concert booking business. So I would look for upcoming artists and try to book them and then sell tickets. But I think I sold like 4 tickets on the first concert and we had to cancel it.
So how did jerseys come into your life?
Yeah, so jerseys came shortly after that. Drop shipping was the hot thing at the time. So just studied that business model. I love jerseys. A lot of guys wore jerseys at the tailgates and parties. So I knew
you're wearing a jersey right now as we speak.
Every day, man. Every day. Yeah, so that was cool. Learned a lot. Learned how to run social media ads. Learned influencer marketing. Was making about 50K a year for 3 years straight, which for a college kid.
Hell yeah. Not bad, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of jerseys were you making? I mean, when you look online, it says, you know, jerseys with rappers, right? So what does that mean? What kind of jerseys were these?
Yeah, literally anything. I mean, obviously not like professional sports jerseys because I didn't have the licensing, but sure. Pretty much anything else. I mean, if an artist approached me, wanted their album artwork on a jersey, I would do that. Throwback TV shows. I mean, league jerseys for basketball leagues, just about anything.
Wow. And what did, you know, so you drop out of college to focus on that full time. What did year 4 look like? You said 50 grand a year for 3 years. When you decided to focus all your time and energy into it, what did it become?
Yes, the first 3 years were about 50 grand a year, but that's also not including all the food expenses. So, I mean, I guess if you count that, it was a little more and all the other expenses. That's the cool part about owning a business. You could write off a lot of stuff. But then from there, I think I started, okay, so the pandemic started and then that's when I would sell masks. So I think that was the first year I made 6 figures profit. We sold $15 million of masks in like a year. It was crazy.
Now, how did you not get burned? Because I remember when that happened, right? And you would hear stories that, you know, this guy went to Costco and bought 20,000 rolls of toilet paper, you know, or whatever. And then all of a sudden you would hear a story like the next month that all of a sudden toilet paper is not in short supply anymore. So the guy's got like 18,000 pounds of toilet paper left and he got fucked. Like, how did you get into the mask and how did you know like what to invest and how did the whole thing come about?
Yeah, great question. I got into it because I was seeing on the news every day about how hospitals and organizations were struggling to get PPE. PPE is like personal protective equipment. So like masks, gowns, gloves, nitrile gloves were in short supply. So I started researching it and my mom's from China. So I had her contact factory. She speaks Mandarin. She knew someone really high up at this one company, which helped out a lot.
Oh, wow.
And eventually figured out the supply chain, which is the part I feel like 80% of people struggled with. They couldn't even get their hands on product. And in terms of not getting stuck with product, I didn't have that issue because I was drop shipping. So I was just sending the product straight from the supplier to the customer. So I never faced that issue. A lot of people that did carry inventory, yeah, like you said, they got screwed. I know someone that got stuck with millions in inventory.
Yeah, what kind of product?
Just like everything, gowns, gloves, masks, and he still can't sell it because I feel like no one really uses it anymore other than hospitals.
It's not a good position to be in. So how long did you do the mask thing?
I did it under a year. It was sort of like a fad because people started realizing like the masks were kind of whatever. Like
Yeah. So you made some money. So kind of taking a step back. So you're doing jerseys in college. Hey, college isn't for me. You know, your dad's right there with you. You convince your mom. So you got some support there. You're making money. But like, you don't seem like I'm just going to kind of wing it kind of guy. You seem pretty well thought out. So, you know, going back then, what was the vision? What was the plan? You know, it's like, I'm selling jerseys. Now I'm doing masks. You know, what am I going to be doing when I'm 30? You know, what was the vision at the time?
Yeah, I go all in on one or two businesses max at the same time. So the jersey stuff I did for 5 years, the plan was just to be my own boss, basically. I've never had a job before other than working for my dad who used to sell books online. So just be my own boss. You know, money was definitely a factor. I wanted to become a millionaire. But these days, like a million isn't even that much, to be honest. So the goals have definitely changed. Now it's more like now that I've had the wealth, it's more just happiness overall. I want to travel the world, want to have fun. I love food, so I love eating at restaurants. But yeah, I think your goals change as you go on and develop.
So it sounds like money was just a means to an end, right? You know, to get kind of where you wanted to be, you know, I want this certain lifestyle. It sounded like the lifestyle was kind of the vision, not necessarily the business to get you there. You know, it seemed like that was just a way to get you to, hey, I want something that's going to, I'm going to be my own boss. I can make a couple million bucks doing, I'm going to have time to work on my health and blah, blah, blah. Is that kind of how you looked at things?
Yeah. And I also want to be one of the best at whatever I do. So I've taken that approach with sports, whether I'm on a sports team, in business, by industry. So that's just always my mindset, to study the greats, study the people that paved the way, and then go out there and execute.
Is that how you're approaching the podcast space too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I studied Rogan. I studied the Call Her Daddy girls. I mean, all the greats and all the people that sold their podcast for 8-9 figures, I've studied, and I'm constantly still studying. If you're not still studying and learning, I mean, you're going to fall behind.
Everybody wants to be a YouTuber or a creator or social media influencer. You've conquered kind of social media. I have no doubt that you'll conquer YouTube and the podcast space too. What, you know, you've done your homework. So give us a summary, give us some bullet points. What does Alex from Call Her Daddy or Rogan have that the others don't? Like, why are they so successful and the other 1,000 podcasters that launched today aren't?
Yeah, well, Rogan's really good at getting very unique guests that, like, he'll find random people that, like, have never been on a podcast and they have crazy stories. I don't even know how he does it. Like, I was watching that one guy who was in the Amazon jungle just living with tribes and explaining how they operate, and that was fascinating.
And then the next week we'll have a comedian, one of his buddies.
Yeah, his range is so insane. Like, he could have anyone on and it'll still be a good conversation because he's a really smart guy.
And then you think it's just, there's talk about talent too, because I think there's not enough. I mean, talent doesn't get talked about really. It's like, no, it's kind of like that hustle mentality, right? Well, you just work hard and you put in the hours and you'll get there. I think there's some level of talent that you've got to have too. Would you agree? Or do you think you can just, you know, reverse engineer it?
No, you definitely need some talent as a host. I mean, you don't want to be interrupting your guests. Joe Rogan's really good at he's good at letting the guests just go on and on. And you got to know the right questions to ask as well. You can't just go in there without any prep and expect it to be great every time.
You know, it's funny. I was kind of doing some prep for this and I watched some interviews done and I wasn't really blown away by any of them. So, you know, hopefully we do better than those. Have you been interviewed? I know I have. I've been interviewed and I've been on it, and it's, you could tell they didn't even think about the interview until the camera went on. And it's like, to me, how disrespectful is that to the guest? You're asking them for their time. You're also asking them hopefully to promote the episode when it comes out on, you know, using, you know, getting their audience to check it out. Mm-hmm. And you can't even put in a couple hours to research and have a real game plan with how you want the conversation to go.
Yeah, it's not smart because your views won't be good if you don't have any prep, in my opinion.
For sure. I think you've done a great job too. And I witnessed it it's not easy, but it's easier to build an online community. You know, it's whether it's on Instagram or whether it's a podcast or wherever, it's really, really hard to get those people together in real life. Mm. And you invited me to your LA, I think that's how we first connected. What do you even call those? Your LA event. And I was shocked by how big it was, how many people were there.
Yeah, it's a digital social meetup. So it's all tied to my media brand. So the podcast is just one angle. The events are another angle. I do food reviews as well. And I might start doing debates. I'm just playing around and seeing what's working. But the meetups, it's been insane to see the growth. First event had 60 people last year. Now they're getting like 250, 300 solid people. Like, these are quality people. And I always meet a few that elevate me every event.
You know, it's funny what happened to me, and you're going to be able to relate to this. I was at your event for a total of 5 minutes, right? I had to leave because I was beyond anxious. So you probably don't remember, but I get in, I'm excited, I'm looking forward to it all week. I get in, I see you, you're in a conversation, I wait till you're done, talk to you for 1 minute. I'm hypersensitive and super self-aware wherever I am, maybe neurotically so. But also realizes your event, you don't have all day to talk to me, talk to you for 30 seconds a minute. Hey, you know, get back to your event. Thanks for the invite. I walk around to see if I know anybody. I don't know anyone. Everybody seems like they're having a good time. Everybody's engaged in these conversations. And I don't, like, literally don't know what to do. You know, I'm a grown ass man thrown in that environment. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm listening to a couple conversations, like maybe, but that's kind of weird. Like, why would I just hop in somebody else's conversation? So all this is fucking going on in my crazy mind. And I'm just getting more anxious and more anxious, more anxious. So I go, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Why? What am I doing? Right. So I don't even think I was there 5 minutes. I may have been there for a total of 3 minutes. But wow, you can relate because you've had anxiety issues we talked about the other day. But you take that times 100, right? You've had like debilitating panic attacks, right?
Yeah, I've definitely had what you experienced too, which is social anxiety. Like there was points where I couldn't even talk to someone like straight up one-on-one. I would just have an anxiety attack. So I can relate to that. I think it's a tip for you is go to an event with someone you know, especially for sure, the first time, because that makes it easier for me. Whenever I go somewhere solo, I kind of experience what you do. But yeah,
but you know what I could have done? I mean, this doesn't occur to me later, and I'm 45 years old and I'm still learning. I'm still dumb, right? I could have, looking back on the way home, I'm like, why didn't I just ask Sean, hey, is there anyone here that you think I should meet? And you would have said, hey, this is Bob, Tom, yeah, this is Bob. And then I would have been on my way, right? But when you're in that moment, you're not thinking clearly.
Yeah, no,
that's kind of in flight or fight.
Yeah, that's a great tip too. There's people that do that to me at my events, and I'm usually good at connecting their dots. But yeah, back to the anxiety stuff. It was, man, so I didn't even know what anxiety was. Like no one talked about it in high school or middle school or anything. So I pretty much had it like my whole life. And then I didn't know what it was until I literally had a panic attack, collapsed on my floor in my college dorm room.
Wow.
I was in the hallway. I had to crawl back to my room and I thought I was dying. Honestly, I thought it was like a heart attack. So then I went to the doctor and he's like, you have anxiety. I'm like, wow. So I got prescribed Xanax, clonazepam, was on that for 2 months. That 2 months went by in like a second, man. Cause you just don't remember anything. Of and course. I was like, man, I can't live the rest of my life like this. So I slowly had to taper off that.
You know, what's funny, people, you know, people write prescriptions for Xanax like it was nothing. I had, I think, was it two people I know that I was close to that I worked with. These guys were all hopped up on, these guys were all hooked on Oxycontin like early on. They were like Oxycontin pioneers, you know, before it was even a thing. These guys were hooked and they were shaving it down and snorting them before, like why you could do that before they had the safety measures in place. And they were all fucked up. But what they would all do is, they had to sleep at some point too, right? So then they would take Xanax at night. So then they didn't even think about it, but they were hooked on Xanax. And what ended up killing these two guys wasn't the Oxycontin or the cocaine. It was the Xanax withdrawal. They stopped taking it and they ended up dying.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one of two drugs. Alcohol could do that to you too. People don't think about that. Like heroin withdrawal won't kill you. It's going to be awful. Right. But, you know, if you're an alcoholic and you just rapidly stop drinking or you rapidly stop, you know, taking Xanax, you could die from this stuff. I don't think people are aware of that. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to pop a couple when I, you know, get uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, that's facts. I mean, I almost died. I had a seizure when I stopped taking it and I had to get in an
ambulance. Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. And the worst part was I was super high off weed when it happened. So that ruined weed for me. Like I could never get high again after that because my brain would just correlate that to the seizure. So that was when I was like, man, like 19 or 20. So that was a life-changing moment. Really had to reevaluate myself. I was a huge stoner back then. So I just cut it completely. And then my dad also had a seizure at one of my soccer games when I was a kid from the same thing. So yeah, it could really kill you.
He had a seizure from the Xanax?
Yeah, Xanax withdrawal.
Wow. I don't think enough people talk about that. You know, it's a real thing. Benzos will fuck you up.
I would never recommend it to anyone after what I went through.
So I know the answer to this because you told me the other day, but so how did you get over it? How did you get over this crippling anxiety?
So it was bad. The anxiety turned into agoraphobia, which is the fear of leaving your house. So I literally couldn't step foot out of my house without collapsing. Like it was so bad, like, but a multitude of reasons fixed it. So basically I got a dog, which really helped. Dogs are amazing, man. Like I got two dogs right now, and whenever I feel a little weird, I just start cuddling with them, petting them, and my anxiety is pretty much gone. Also, I was dealing with a lawsuit at the time, which this isn't talked about a lot either, but lawsuits really take a toll on you mentally, especially the first couple you deal with, because you don't know what to expect. I thought I was going to lose everything. So I ended up settling that, which I think helped a ton. My girlfriend helped. I even got a therapist. So I was, my mom was driving me to therapy. Like, I think I went like 4 times. That helped a little bit. I think it's different for each person. But my definitely a good support system helped the most.
You also talked about mushrooms kind of help too. And that's still something, you know, you microdose, you said even now, right?
Yeah, I didn't do it back then when I was dealing with it. But now I'm a huge advocate for it. I microdose maybe once or twice a week now. It's more so for productivity, but now there's a lot of studies on it, how it really cures depression and anxiety and stuff too, which is cool.
Now, I've taken mushrooms recreationally, you know, a lot of times through my, you know, through my years, and but it never necessarily made me more productive or anything like that.
You were taking it as a full dose, like a trip, right? Not a microdose.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's different. I'm talking about like a microdose.
So what does that do? Explain to me what a microdose is, how it feels, and how it makes you more productive.
Yeah, so a microdose is probably 1/10 the amount you ate. So if you're eating an eighth, it's 0.35. And you're just more productive. You get no visuals at all.
Okay.
You're not hallucinating. You're just locked in. I compare it to like a natural Adderall if you've taken that.
Oh, okay.
No burnout either.
No crash.
No crash.
Oh, that's pretty attractive. So yeah. What do you do? I mean, is it legal here in California? I know it is in the, up in, I don't know if it's Oregon or Washington or maybe both. It's legal. Is it legal here?
I don't know about Cali. I know it's legal in 4 areas of the country right now, but I think they're going to start rolling it out heavily over the next year or so with all these new studies coming out, which is super exciting. I mean, if I was Big Pharma, I'd be very worried and they're probably pushing against it, but we'll see what happens.
So what do you recommend for somebody in Ohio right now who's got a local weed dealer who happens to have mushrooms too, which is usually how it kind of works, right? You know, somebody who gets mushrooms. How would you recommend they even kind of start down that road?
Using it
for enhancement purpose, not to get fucked up and trip.
Yeah. No, they're not for everyone. I mean, I know people that have had horrible trips. You probably do as well. Off mushrooms or acid or whatever. So just do your research whenever you plan on taking it, be in the right mindset, because that's a big part. I remember this girl was on acid in college I was with, and dude, she should not have done it because she was not in a good mindset beforehand. And then her energy rubbed off on me. Like I could feel her negative energy, you know, it was horrible.
Oh, I read somewhere, you know, I used to read the psychedelic, you know, authors and stuff, and they always say it's set and setting. It really is, you know, who you're around, what your environment is right around you. It, you know, if you're in the wrong one, it could send you spiraling. It's not a good place to be at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's all about the people you're with and the setting for sure.
Now, we talked about kind of your successes, right? You know, I interviewed this guy, and everybody check it out, Ruigi. He's the founder of this streetwear brand, Rude, and, you know, everybody from Jay-Z to LeBron James, everybody kind of wears this. But he said something that really stuck with me. He said, people have to lean into their sorrows because not everyone knows what it feels like to win, but everyone knows what it feels like to lose. So, you know, you watching this or listening to this may never sell a company for $1 million, right? I may never either, probably won't, right? But, you know, we've all lost. Talk about some of your losses because, you know, I think it's important to show that side of things too, that, you know, being an entrepreneur is a gamble a lot of times and, you know, you don't always win.
Oh man, I've had some major losses, but losses are good in my eyes because you need them to learn and move forward in your life. I mean, it's been every year. I'll start from the very beginning with Jersey Champs. I had a music festival, sent them like 200 jerseys. They said they're gonna pay me after, never paid me. And it's all relative, but that money at the time for me was a lot. I think it was like $8,000 or something.
Wow.
And then your losses just get bigger as you evolve and make more money. So like last year during the crypto bull run, I had $20 million and I lost pretty much all of it because I got greedy, didn't sell at the top, and then crypto crashed. So you're just always going to be dealing with them, but you got to learn to manage your ego, manage greed, and know that they're inevitable. Like a lot of people get super upset about losses and they start dwelling on it, but you kind of just got to learn from it and move on.
It's funny. I got lucky with crypto. At the time, it was taking up too much of my life. It was constant checking, you know, because it would fluctuate so rapidly, you know. So it's like checking the price, you know, 50, 100 times a day, obsessively, right? Buying, selling, it just got to be too much. So I sold when Bitcoin was like 55 grand and Ethereum, I don't know what it was, like maybe around 2 grand or like somewhere there. Mm-hmm. So I sold it all. And at the time, like the next month or so, it actually went up. Bitcoin went up to like 65 grand. Ethereum went to like, I don't know, mid 2000s or something. And I was kicking myself going, you're so fucking stupid. You sold at the wrong time, right? But looking back, you know, it was a pretty good move. You can never time these things out. You know, who knows where the peak is when you're in it.
Never.
But my wife's cousin did the opposite, right? When Dogecoin, in case you don't remember, I'm sure you remember Dogecoin and kind of when it popped off with Elon and everything.
Yeah.
He bought it like 5 years previously to that. You know, he bought $100 worth when it was like 0.00000001 cent, right? And when it went up to where it was, I think his $100 was worth like 25 grand. And I was begging him to sell, begging him. I mean, like, I pleaded with him. My father-in-law, you know, talked to him. We're like, we got to sit this kid down. Like, this could be like 25 grand to him could be life-changing. You know what I mean? Right. Like that, you could buy a car, you could put a down payment on a nice place, whatever. And he didn't. And his whole attitude was like, you know, whatever, you know, you gamble. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But I wouldn't have the positive mindset that you do or he does. I would never forget that. And I would obsessively think about that and how stupid I was and how I lost 25 grand and all this.
Yeah.
How do you guys do it? I mean, how do you have like a Zen approach to that? Not obsess about it, not beat yourself up or think you're stupid or
there's
a million other thoughts that come racing through your head when that happens.
I mean, yeah, I used to do that a lot and I still do it honestly a little bit to this day, but I'm studying a lot of Joe Dispenza right now and mindset stuff. And man, your thoughts are so powerful and your words, it's like insane. Do you know his story?
No, I don't. That name keeps popping up over and over again lately. I heard a couple other people talk about him.
Yeah, dude, this guy's incredible. I'll give you a brief summary. So he was running a triathlon, right? Mm-hmm. And he was in the biking section, got hit by a car going 50, broke 6 vertebrae in his back, right? So he's in the hospital bed. He got 4 different opinions from the best doctors in the country saying you need to get the rod in your spine to be able to walk again, which is like a huge pull, super long, and he'd be walking like that the rest of his life. And he decided not to get it. So he just used the power of his mind to fix his body. Within 6 weeks, he was walking again.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So he fixed everything just by thinking. And he went on to do further studies on this, developed his own method, started having seminars. People would show up to the seminars with stage 4 cancer, with MS, with paralyzations. And by the end of the seminar, these people were cured and some of them were walking again that were previously paralyzed or had MS. So that's how powerful your mind is.
Wow. I got to check him out. It reminded me of the stories and you don't have to go that far. I mean, that's pretty extreme, you know, curing a major back injury or cancer or something like that. But on a lesser scale, I've read stories of prisoners of war who were musicians and in their mind, they would practice every day on the, I'm a piano player. All of a sudden I'm in, you know, prison. I'm playing scales and I'm working out chords, sequence, whatever. I'm doing all in my head. When they came out, they were better players than they were before they went in and they never touched the instrument. It's the same thing. Like your mind didn't know it wasn't playing physically in your mind. Your brain thought you were.
Exactly. Same concept. And yeah, I used to be very pessimistic because that was the household environment I was raised in. And I actually just talked about this with my mom the other day and I'm thankful we reached a resolution, but she was very, you know, toxic at the time and negative because the marriage was awful. So it was taking a toll on her mentally. And my dad was the most pessimistic guy of all time because of the way he was raised. His dad used to beat the shit out of him. Wow. So that rubbed off on me. Like I used to just close my eyes and picture myself shooting a basketball when I was a kid, and it would miss every time because that's just the mindset I had.
That's
and
so
now
sad.
I close my eyes, swish every time. So it took me a while to reconfigure my mind, you know?
I heard you talk about manifestation and you're a big believer in that. I heard you say that just about your podcast, like I'm going to manifest Joe Rogan and Elon Musk and these other heroes of yours on the show. Like, what do you mean by manifesting? Like, how do we apply that to our lives and how does it work?
Yeah. So manifesting's just one part of it. So wanting to get them on is just one part, but you also have to thank the universe. This is what I'm learning from Joe Dispenza. You have to be grateful and thank the universe for everything in your life. And you got to thank it like it's already happened. So I got to be like, thank you, universe, for allowing Joe Rogan on my podcast. So I meditate every day and just say stuff out loud that I want to manifest and act like it's already happened. And then eventually the universe will reward you and make it happen. And yeah, every day I write down 5 things I'm grateful for. I've been doing that for like 2 years straight. And I have a goals list. And yeah, just a big believer in it, man, to be honest.
Talk about goal setting and manifestation and all of that in practical terms, right? What does it look like for you? Is it in a notes app? Is it something you look at every month? Is it something you tape to your wall at your desk and you look at? Like, how do you manage all that stuff?
Yeah, there's a few things. Big thing I like is a vision board. So picture, I put it on my computer screen, my phone screen. Some people print it out, whatever you want to do. I got a guy with a 6-pack abs. I got Forbes 30 under 30 logo on there. I got money on there, mansion on there, a happy family, happy marriage. And all that stuff is starting to like actually happen to me. So it's crazy. And then goal setting, I use an app called Trello. I really like Trello because it's, you can drag when you're done with the task. So I have 2 columns, to-do list and then completed list. And then some people have an in progress list in the middle, but I've been using Trello for years. I really like Trello.
I never thought about that. What is your vision board like look like? Did you go on Fiverr and have somebody like, did you have like 10 pictures and you go put this together in a document for me? Like, how do you?
Yeah, there's a site where you just import all the images. I'm looking at mine right now. I got Rolex watches, gold bars, LeBron dunking the ball because I wanted to be able to dunk.
You're tall enough, man. You should be able to pull that off.
Yeah, now I can. But back then I was in terrible shape because when you sit down for 5 years and live a sedentary lifestyle, you lose all your athletic abilities. And that's part of the sacrifice that we were talking about earlier. Like, I also sacrificed a lot of my health to get to where I'm at, but now I'm really taking health serious.
You know, I interviewed Rob Dyrdek, and you should have him on too. He blew my mind. And it's something like I think this is the lesson for people out there who want to start a podcast or maybe have 5 episodes and like, it's not going well. Should I have it? Forget monetarily, you know, maybe you won't get rich at it. Forget any of that, right? What you learn, like right now, just from this interview, I am going to make a vision board and put it on my laptop and my cell phone home screen. Like, why wouldn't I do that? Yeah. You know, I'm not good at graphics. I'm going to spend $5 on Fiverr today. I'm going to screenshot some fucking pictures and I'm going to be all about it. Right. When I was talking to Rob, the thing I learned from that one was just time tracking. And you can kind of have it all just because you're sitting in a desk for 8 hours, you know, or 12 hours or 13 hours a day grinding doesn't mean you have to live an unhealthy lifestyle. I mean, there's a half hour in everyone's day to be able to go exercise.
Yeah.
Right. Or 45 minutes here and there. It's all about how you manage your time. And his whole thing was he tracks every second of his day. Now, that's a little extreme, but I've been tracking my time. And you see where it goes. And it's like, there actually is enough time to do the important things. Like if you prioritize things, and firstly, you got to determine, I guess, what is important.
Right.
Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. It's a balance that every entrepreneur struggles with at first, but you realize that, yeah, you do have time. And I hate when people are like, yeah, I don't have time to come to that meeting or to do whatever, because it's such a bad excuse, honestly. Like, you could always make 30 minutes.
For sure. I meditate every morning and have forever. And it's like, I meditate for 20 minutes, but then I look at, like, I watched 12 hours of TV last week. You know, I don't picture myself like as a big couch potato, but like my morning routine shitty. Like, I wake up, I have coffee and I just watch YouTube or TV, right? I watched the Warriors game this morning, right, you know, from last night, 'cause I didn't catch it. And there goes an hour and a half like that, you know, those things add up.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's productive. I mean, YouTube's pretty productive for the most part, I feel like. But once you start watching, binge watching shows, I mean, we've all been through that phase where we're watching seasons in a day of Netflix. And yeah, that's not the most productive sometimes.
What's your, because you kind of, it seems like you're like a hacker, like a life hacker in everything you do. What's your approach to health and fitness now? How do you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it probably differently from most people my age because they don't care usually. But I'm taking blood tests yearly. I think everyone should do that. It's not that expensive. You learn a lot. We all have deficiencies of some sort. So then you can adjust, take some necessary supplements. And supplement wise, I only want to take natural stuff. So I don't want to take anything unnatural. That's the way I approach food as well. So I don't want to eat anything processed for the most part. So I'm very picky with food. Also take a gene test. So I found out I'm allergic to fortified and enriched grains, which is in like every bread and pasta in the US. 44% of people are actually allergic and they don't even know. And then yeah, gym at least 3 to 5 days a week, cardio. I'm in two basketball leagues. Sauna also. Sauna increases your testosterone. It's really good for you. So I do that 3 to 5 times a week.
What supplements do you take?
I mean, there's like 40 of them. There's this guy named, I think, Brian Johnson. Have you seen him?
Uh-uh.
So he's reverse aging his body. He takes about 120 supplements a day, I believe.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So his website's called Blueprint, and I'm obsessed with this guy. You should have him on the podcast. He's been able to reverse his biological age by 5 years. And he's aging at 0.75 per year. So he's getting a free year of life every 4 years right now. It's pretty incredible what he's doing.
And he's just a firm believer in supplements. And I'm sure he's doing other things to kind of roll back time, but that's like his whole thing is like taking the right supplements to kind of extend your life.
Supplements. Yeah. All natural supplements is one part of it. Another part of it's diet. He's actually vegan. I'm trying out his diet soon, but I can't rely solely on that because he only eats 2000 calories a day. And I burn like 4,000 a day. So I'm going to just start implementing some of his snacks and diet. He also does a lot of extreme stuff, which I'm probably not going to do. Like he has this one ab machine that punches you in the abs. And it's like the equivalent of doing 10,000 sit-ups in 30 minutes.
Like what boxers do.
Oh, boxers do when that?
The trainers will punch them in the stomach, you know, as they're flexing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is like a machine though. Like you put it
on. Oh, no way.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. And then he does a lot of skin stuff. So he has all these skin machines. He's reversing his skin age. It's pretty intense.
Wow. What else should we check out, man? We know about your podcast. Where else can we find you? We'll include links to your Instagram, your TikTok, the audio podcast, YouTube. What else are you promoting?
Yeah, mainly the pod. The pod actually just got, I got my first false information. Has this happened to you yet?
What do you mean?
One of my Instagram clips, it says this is false and then it doesn't let you view.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I might be shadow banned right now, but yeah, that's my main focus. And then the events, if anyone wants to come, have them every couple months. It's always cool to meet face to face with people.
How do they get on the list? How do they come to your events?
It's on my bio in my Instagram URL on my Hubie link.
Okay.
Eventbrite. Yeah.
Shout out Hubie. I just talked to Jordan from Hubie today. So I love Hubie. Nice. I use it too. And finally, I think you gave us a lot to kind of unpack from vision boards to supplements to a lot of things to using Trello. What's one more thing we could, you know, the person watching or listening could do to improve their lives that most people aren't doing now?
I would say most important thing is to learn a high income skill. And there's a few ways you could do that. You can work for someone for free for like a couple months, shadow them, learn what they do. I definitely recommend that if you are in the position to do that on the side. And just in general, learn as much as possible. So if you're in high school, college right now, that stuff you're learning won't be able to make you a lot of money. So you got to learn like when you get home, just watch YouTube videos, watch documentaries, whatever you need to do. But just realize that school and business world don't really collide as much as you'd think.
Calculus didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, brother. Everyone go check out the podcast. Everyone go check out his social media accounts. We'll have links in the description. Thank you so much, brother. It was a pleasure, sitting down with you on camera. This was nice.
Thanks, Tom. That was a blast.
And everyone subscribe, turn on notifications. New interviews every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time with some of the most successful people in the world who teach you how to improve your life. It's time to level up. Thanks, guys.